Welcome back to the Calling Hours podcast. We're so excited that you are taking some time to listen to our interview today. Today's guest is Cole Waybright, who is our Vice President of Sales Optimization at Homesteaders Life Company. Cole has been with Homesteaders for about a year and is single-handedly building our sales optimization engine and has been doing just incredible, wonderful work. Cole has a great background in the funeral profession. We're going to hear a lot more about his roots dating all the way back to his family-owned funeral home. But I am excited for the conversation today, and I'm excited that you guys are taking time to join us and listen in. So with that, welcome, Cole. We're glad you're here.
Thanks, Danielle. It's great to be here.
So Cole, you, like many people at Homesteaders, grew up around the funeral profession. Can you tell us a little bit about your family's history in providing funeral services?
Sure. So my uncle was actually the first one in our family to kind of get into the profession, and someone I always looked up to. So when I was about 10 or 11, he had the opportunity to buy his wife's family funeral home in our hometown. So it had been a longstanding funeral home that had been there for many years. So that became Parsons Waybright Funeral Home. And then, you know, throughout time, I was pretty well exposed to all things in that world. And like many people that come up through the profession or the industry, I started when I was 15, 16 years old, washing cars, mowing grass, kind of painting bumper blocks, whatever needed to be done around the funeral home, which eventually evolved into working visitations and services. And before you know it, I was kind of the person that would help out with really about anything around the location. And for many years said, never going into this, you know, not going to do it. And then I was home for the summer from college and came in from a night of working the parking lot during visitation and said, hey, if I went to mortuary school, could I get a job here? Yeah. So they said, hey, yeah, of course, but let's make sure this is what you want to do. So I was able to do my apprenticeship and then head off to Cincinnati for mortuary school. And, you know, the rest is kind of history.
I'm curious, and maybe it's hard to put yourself back at that, you know, that college age kids walking into the funeral home that night, but what was it that changed your mind?
You know, it was amazing. I don't know if it's one specific thing or just the culmination of so many great experiences of something that's truly meaningful to people in the community. And it was just kind of a light bulb switched on in my head that said, hey, you know what? This would actually be a really, you know, great experience to help people through a very difficult time. So there's rewards more than even just the financial side of things, or it's more than just a paycheck. It's really got, you know, more meaning to it. And that I think is what really drew me in.
Yeah. I think that's a common kind of pull for people who enter the profession. And I feel like your experience kind of growing up around it and saying, no, never, not me, was also very common. It's kind of interesting. Those of us who grew up around it seem to have had that period of time where we were sure we would never end up here. And yet here we are. I'm curious, once you started at the funeral home, you know, you were in mortuary school, you were doing your apprenticeship. Were there any things in those first few years that were surprising to you?
You know, I think when really started kind of getting into more of the day-to-day, beyond just the part-time help situation, just the level of complexity that can go into something in a short period of time. What funeral directors do is nothing short of amazing on a daily basis, between juggling, you know, and oftentimes putting their own family or lives on hold to make sure that they're there to support and take care of the community as a whole. That really set in, you know, long hours. There's not kind of the 9 to 5, you know, per se. It could happen. Death happens anytime. And, you know, you have to answer that call. And so that was a little bit, I won't say unexpected, but more demanding than I imagined. But also, again, just being able to really be there front lines with families, I also got to see how rewarding it was being able to help them, you know, during that time as well.
I didn't tell you I was going to ask this question, but I love asking funeral directors to share the most meaningful and memorable service they plan for a family.
Mm. There's a few that come to mind. One that really kind of solidified for me that this was the right choice was actually after I had graduated mortuary school and worked at a funeral home in Cincinnati for a number of years, came back to my family funeral home. And within the first few weeks, tragic accident with three of my former classmates. So two guys that I grew up with playing sports, a girl from our school that I had known for years that were, you know, in a tragic car accident, and meeting with each of their families in that period of time and just working with the community as a whole, you know, when something like that happens, someone dies at a young age, that was extremely difficult, to say the least, but also one of those things that said, you know what, this is the right move. There's a lot of really good things that come from what we do and when we do it really well. And that's what really kind of, to me, is one of those turning points that said, yep, this is the right path, and something that then created that journey on from there.
Yeah, those are really hard funerals to plan, especially right out of mortuary school for families that you knew and people that you grew up with. That's a really hard ask. No wonder that one sticks with you. You didn't stay in the day-to-day operations permanently. You eventually kind of transitioned out of the day-to-day funeral directing into more of a training role. Can you talk a little bit about why you made that transition, what motivated you, and kind of what you learned in that process?
Yeah, so, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, being able to come back home and work with my family, and also, you know, being able to work in a community that I had grown up in and know. But I'm also a very firm believer that everything happens for a reason and the right timing. And after a few years, I was presented the opportunity to go work with SCI. And at first, I took over running a combo operation for them, which was really kind of the first jump into cemetery operations, which was a great learning experience, great growing experience. Also during that time, you know, there was a few acquisitions that were made, and the team needed help really onboarding and bringing those acquisitions into the day-to-day of different aspects of the organization. And so I worked really closely with the training team. And I remember coming out of that 8-week stint that I was really kind of hands-on with them, the leader of that group said, you know what, you make a great impact with the families you serve today. We think you can make an even bigger impact by helping us really train, you know, a lot of the funeral directors and, you know, really any staff within the organization, and really have an opportunity to impact many, many families, you know, over the course of time through that. So I've always enjoyed, you know, being an athlete, being a coach, really taking on that type of responsibility, and love that, you know, training and coaching aspect of things. So had the chance to kind of jump in full, you know, head first really into that world, and it was a great time. I mean, it was a really crazy time for over the course of a couple of years, but it gave me a great opportunity to learn how different the industry is across the country, mm-hmm. and even in different countries, but also how similar it is and how there's still that common core belief in what we do. So that was a great another learning opportunity for me, and a chance for professional growth. And out of that, really started working very closely with the sales team of that organization. And it was just kind of a natural fit. I had always sold preneed and always approached it from more of a educational standpoint, you know, wanting to make sure families that walk into the funeral home, maybe never having done this, or maybe only once or twice in their lifetime, had an opportunity to truly make an informed decision and really feel good about what they were doing. So naturally kind of went to work more with that group, and then had the chance to come back home and oversee pre-need sales for, you know, a number of states in that kind of mid-Atlantic area. Mm. So that was a great chance. And then kind of then led me to really the last 7 years of my career, which, again, one of those things I've always really enjoyed doing throughout my time is building and problem solving. So whether that be a process or a team or a customer experience, something to make the profession, you know, better, or make the team I'm working with better. So I had that opportunity to go work with another organization and really build out that pre-need sales side of things, and take them from a group that was pretty passive and had been really making their way through it and have plenty of opportunity to grow, and really taking that to become a really great piece, which then led into really the last 10 months of having the chance to join Homesteaders and bring a lot of that experience that I've gained throughout the years being an at-need funeral director, a manager of a location, trainer, sales leader, and kind of be able to bring some of that experience to all of our partners that we work with.
Yeah, you certainly are not alone at Homesteaders in having that experience with different, you know, funeral or organizations that are in the acquisition business. I mean, we have a lot of people at Homesteaders who have, you know, who have spent time at Keystone or Foundation Partners. And of course, Steve Schaefer is a great example. Yep. as someone who came from that world. And I've watched and worked alongside those individuals for 10 years now. And I'm always really impressed with the depth of understanding they have in funeral home operations, because you get such a beautiful view of all of these different funeral homes and how they serve their families uniquely. And you go in and you offer them ways to kind of standardize some things that need to be standardized, but you get this really interesting depth of understanding of how the markets are different in different areas and how one size doesn't really fit at all. You have to be able to tailor, you know, good standard pre-need marketing discipline to your unique market. But I think that that's something that you bring to the table because you had that experience. You've seen a lot of funeral homes. You've worked in the funeral home. You see how it's done and when it's done well, what it looks like, and that it can look different and still be done well at different markets. Based on that experience, I'm really curious how you would answer this question of, you know, what has changed? What have you seen change in the profession over the course of your career? And where do you think it's heading?
Yeah, that's a great question. And something that I think a lot of people ask, you know, over and over and have over the last even 5 or 10 years. The easy one to say would be, you know, cremation. When I started 20 plus years ago, our family funeral home cremation rate was less than 10%. And, you know, now you see what that has grown to even on a national level. So just that acceptance and really how the profession has had to evolve and really change along with that acceptance of cremation and what they offer. Because when I started, you know, really it was one of those things where someone chose cremation and it was almost a sigh of, I won't say relief, but it was one of those things where you knew it wasn't kind of the pressure or the timing that needed to go into a full service that was going to happen, you know, within a couple of days and just getting everything combined and multiple families. You could do a little bit of things in a better time frame, really. So now kind of seeing from that to kind of where it is today and how people really dive into it. And that's definitely a big change. I think the other that is one of the things that I saw over the course of again, the last 20 plus years was when I started, everyone was even 2 days of visitation service the following day. It was very traditional, very rigid. And then there was this period of time where almost families went away from services at the funeral home. They didn't want that cookie cutter or that traditional piece anymore. And we're kind of searching even outside the four walls. And I think the funeral profession though has done a great job of recognizing that and understanding that funeral services can look different. How someone celebrates and honors their loved one can be something beyond, you know, the standard funeral speech and funeral songs that happen. It can be a party. It could be a time of remembrance. It can be storytelling. It can be a lot of different things. And I think a lot of funeral homes are doing a great job of being able to really be progressive in the way that they're presenting that to families and sharing with them that, yes, that's okay. We can do it. And really taking that approach to making sure that it's something meaningful and that matters for that family specifically, not just always what they've done.
Yeah, I think you touched on the two really big ones, right? The cremation and the personalization. And I think I'm a big believer in that, like, change is going to bring with it good change and bad change. And I think there is a really positive shift we're seeing in the profession towards this idea of, like, personalization and making services less cookie cutter and more customized and more personal and more memorable. But I think there's also this element, particularly around the cremation rates, where as a society, death has just become less disruptive. We're less willing to disrupt our everyday lives for a funeral. And that cremation has made it so that you don't have to, right? You aren't on that time period of needing to get a decedent in the ground in 3 days. You have flexibility, which can be good in a lot of ways. But I think the trade-off is that we've lost the sense of significance, that time really maybe should stop when someone has died and you have to grieve that. And taking a moment, especially if it's inconvenient, to say, you know what? I'm gonna make it to that funeral, even if it's if it's hard, even if it means that I have to take off work. I think we've lost a little bit of that, and I wish we could get that back.
I think some of that's a shift in the society too, right? That when I first started, you know, again, families tend to stay in the same geographical area. Now the families are much more disparate across the country. I mean, my family's the same way. I'm in Florida. A lot of my family is still in West Virginia. There's some in other states. And so that makes things a little bit more difficult, you know, to have that stoppage in time. I think even today as a society, and we don't necessarily, unfortunately, value that time. Many, you know, places don't have bereavement leave or time off like there was even 10, 15, 20 years ago. That was an important piece, being able to stop and then just grieve for a moment. And oftentimes, I think we've unfortunately let life get in the way of even some of those important time periods. And so I think the combination of those things, and just, again, it's just a little bit of a different world that has made that change over time. And while, to your point, there's some really good things that come from it, it's also a little bit unfortunate.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why you're seeing so much more emphasis placed on aftercare, because if someone's not taking those, you know, first few days after a loss to sit in their grief and really start that journey, when are they starting it? And there's some complexity to that grief and some difficulty that comes from not having kind of the historically normative grief initiation process. And so I think aftercare that integrates a really, really substantive grief support can help backfill a little bit of that and help address some of the mental health issues that come when death is less disruptive. And that's certainly something that you're seeing across the spectrum. So maybe that's the third. It's cremation, personalization, and aftercare that they're shifting forward. As you look at what the future of the profession looks like, what role do you think homesteaders is going to play in that?
You know, the industry, again, has changed a lot. You know, there's not as many funeral directors, you know, or people going into the profession, maybe as there once was. There's also more, I think, a larger competitive landscape. You see, you know, some more consolidation happening. You see others from outside of the industry even trying to start to find a way in, or think that there's a consumer path maybe that they can lift from a different vertical or a different industry. So what I hope that the homesteaders can really do is support and supplement, you know, some of those challenges that funeral homes are facing, to help them remain relevant, to help them, you know, in a time where they may not have the staffing capabilities that they once had, provide them with some options that still allows them to be very relevant and forward thinking in their communities with their families that they serve, but maybe low effort on their side. Things that they can just plug and play that will provide great value to the families, but doesn't necessarily require them to do a lot of that heavy lifting or bring on more manpower, et cetera. And then I think it's the other piece is just being true to our promises lasted us 120 years in business. And that's just being good stewards of the profession and really making sure that, you know, we're a singular focus. We focus on nothing but the funeral profession and the industry and the support of that. We're not trying to find different lines of insurance or revenue or anything else. We're really focused on giving back to a meaningful profession that's given, you know, many of us a career that's led us to where we're at.
Yeah, I think you hit on something really interesting there, that the sense of helping funeral homes become more efficient with their human resources. It's such a challenge for funeral providers to find and retain really good people. And so anytime they can have a partner that comes in and says, we have a solution that takes you no staff hours, or we have a solution even better that saves you staff hours, I think that partner is going to win every single time, because the funeral professionals are so hungry for those kinds of solutions. So yeah, I would agree. I think that the ways that homesteaders is investing in tools that are like that, that save time or don't take time, are going to really be helpful to the funeral profession. And certainly the things that we do every single day with the families that we're serving, the policy owners, just the mission critical work that we're doing as a preneed provider in the space, that's always going to be of value to the families and to the funeral homes. I would agree with you there. It's interesting. You've only been with homesteaders for about 10 months, and yet you have built a team already. You have a lot of really incredibly talented and ambitious and smart people working for you. And like me, you are a relatively young leader in the space. And I think it's interesting when I watch you lead and I watch other kind of our peers leading, we lead differently than the generations that have come before us. And I always like talking to young leaders about their approach to how they manage their teams, because I think it's such a really good learning experience. So I'd love it if you would share a little bit about how you're approaching that those leadership challenges and kind of what you're taking to your team and how you're leading them through a period of really incredible growth and change.
Yeah, it's a great question. I've been lucky enough throughout my career to have some really great mentors and people I've worked for that not just told me what to do, but why we're doing it and even how to do it. And some of those great people that I look back on were the ones that were beside me shoulder to shoulder that really kind of it drove that home. And that's what I try to take some of those things that I've learned over the course of years or through that demonstration and apply that even with our team, being able to really give people great opportunities to grow, to learn, but also give them that understanding of kind of why this works or why this maybe doesn't. And oftentimes even the opportunities to, what I like to say is kind of, you know, fail forward. There's no such thing as doing something wrong if we learn from it. And, you know, giving that kind of grace and freedom to think outside of the box, to be creative, to think of new ways and innovative ways that we can bring about this great message that we have about the importance of pre-planning and how it helps families and is a great, you know, tool for funeral homes in different ways. And being able to just help, you know, not only those on my team, but then in return, the funeral home partners that we work with, you know, if we can give them some insight and help them be a little bit smarter in their day-to-day and give them some, you know, insights or data that allows them to make better decisions and things that, or put things into place that'll help them support their families differently or better, that's a huge win. So it's a challenge, you know, always, but one that I really appreciate and one that I appreciate some of the people who have led me in the past.
One thing that I see you being really good at is the recruiting piece, finding good talent. I know that's a challenge in this space. So I'm curious if you have any tips or recommendations or lessons you've learned specifically about how to find good people.
Yeah, well, first is don't burn bridges. You know, you never know.
That's good life advice in general, but yes, especially for recruiting.
Where are you going to end up or things? And I've had the you know, I think privilege over the course of my career of building great relationships. And this is a big industry, but still very small at the same time. And you get to know a lot of people and, you know, being able to just understand some of the characteristics as well that you're looking for and not, I think, shying away. I try to think about what I'm really recruiting for and what are those skill sets or attributes or even the aptitude that someone may have that will help them be, you know, great at that piece. And then also just putting people in the right spots. I remember one of the things I read multiple years ago was really about putting people in the right seat of the bus. And, you know, oftentimes getting someone just in the right spot, doing the right thing, something that they really enjoy, something that they can lean into, even if they don't necessarily have the experience, but something that they really show an interest in can be really special sometimes. And I don't know if there's any magic formula, but it's something that I've just maybe been lucky over the course of years of coming across people that and finding something maybe in them that helps them excel.
Yeah, I'm sure there is an element of luck, but I think a lot of it speaks to your ability to maintain those relationships, to see potential in people, to recognize the difference between talent and skill. You know, talent is something that people have inherently in them. Skill can be taught. And so I think that's a testament to your ability to be a good manager, a good recruiter, is to be able to sniff those things out. Been in the business for a while. I mean, you're not 40 years into your career like some funeral professionals, but you've been in the business for a while. You've seen some things. And so I think I would really be curious what advice you would give to someone who is in mortuary school or just starting out in this profession, things they should watch out for, things they should pay attention to, things that are going to help them along the way.
That's a great question. And one of the things I think I've been lucky enough to be able to go back to Cincinnati and speak a few times and talk to some of those classes and even throughout time, I've had friends or family who maybe their kids are looking at getting into the industry and call and say, hey, can you give them some advice? And probably the number one thing that I tell people all the time is this is one, just a very meaningful full profession of what we do matters. But the second thing is that there's a lot of options throughout and how you can be involved in the industry, whether that's as a funeral director, whether that's as a maybe embalmer or someone that really enjoys that prep work that's so important, or even if it's pre-need and helping families arrange ahead of time and get those plans in place, as well as just, again, the whole, you know, maybe quote-unquote vendor side of being that support person, helping them understand why, funeral homes understand why these pieces of the puzzle are important. There's a lot of meaningful roles within the profession, so to really keep an eye out for opportunity, and then just find what you love, find what you really can lean into, because what we do is not easy. There's a lot of difficult times, and you know, kind of it's a tale of two sides. Unfortunately, we're dealing with families in one of the worst points in their life. They've lost something that's very precious to them, but at the same time, there's a lot of, again, great rewards that come from being able to help a family through that situation, whether that's, again, in one of various different roles or support roles.
Yeah, I love that. There's so many different ways to help families. It may not be by sitting across from an arrangement conference. That might not be the best fit. There might be other alternatives where someone can use their skills and talents and their passion in different ways. But the end result could be the same, that at the end of the day, we're helping families have that better farewell. We're helping families start that grief journey in a better, more productive way. I think that's really, really lovely advice. Well, we ask these last two questions of every single podcast guest, partly because I love the first question and I'm desperate for new book recommendations, and partly because it's just really a nice, interesting way to end each interview. So the first question is, what are you reading right now?
So right now, one of the books that I've been kind of diving into is Creativity Inc. So it's by...
Oh, it's so good. Are you listening to it or are you reading it?
I'm reading it.
Okay, you should listen to it too.
I have the audio version as well, but I am...
The reader is incredible.
Yes, and just, you know, hearing those stories from that co-founder of Pixar and the way that they took some of those management principles. What I found exciting was the management principles that were successful and still kept that creativity happening, even when they were really going through extreme growth, which I think kind of correlates very well to even my team's kind of doing and what we're doing even at Homesteaders. So I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's a great book. It's actually, so my team does a quarterly book club, and that was the very first book we read when we started. And I think we're 6 years into the book club now. That was the very first one. And it was, I still remember a lot of things about that book. Was it Story Trust? Is that what they called it? Where they would have these, they would bring in different people who aren't related to the project, and they would just have fresh perspective, and they would dig into these projects and come at it from different ideas and different perspective, different lenses and experience. And they always made the movies better. They always made the story better. But yeah, that was a great book. That's a fun one. I'm excited for you to keep reading that one.
Yeah.
The last question we ask is, what is giving you energy right now?
Wow. That can go a lot of different ways. You know, I think from a professional side, what's extremely exciting is some of the things we're doing here at Homesteaders. And as a 120-year-old company, we're not necessarily resting in our laurels, but we're really almost doubling down with how we give back and provide support to the profession as a whole in, I think, a different way than really anyone has. And what we're building, I think, is truly something special that not only will enhance, you know, what we are able to provide to our funeral partners, but in return, what our funeral home partners are able to provide to their families through that experience and the tools or the resources. So that's, to me, again, when I go back to what I've always enjoyed doing, that building, creating, driving those things, this is a really fun time right now.
That suggests that you're in the right seat on the right bus.
Yeah.
That's if your job is giving you energy right now, that's a great sign.
Yes.
Well, Cole, thank you so much for your time. I know how much is on your plate and how very busy you are. So I appreciate the time that you have taken with me today and with our listeners. I've enjoyed our conversation. I hope that they've learned something from it as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the time and hope that it was insightful and somebody can maybe take a nugget or two away.
If nothing else, maybe more people will read Creativity Inc.
Hopefully so.
Thanks, Cole.